This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehia Suhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
So if you have people with disabilities, they can provide you more additional insight on how to help, you know, provide a larger market for customers with disabilities.
That was Raquel Ngibidion, founder of Initiative for National Growth Africa, about the employing workers with physical disabilities can expand business opportunities. Details coming up. Also, Guinea-Bissau's president has dissolved the parliament, and UNICEF raises concerns about the HIV infection rate among adolescent girls. These stories and more on Africa News Tonight. We start with our top story. The UN Children's Agency says adolescent girls now continue to bear the brunt of the HIV epidemic, with 98,000 new infections in 2022, and that children and adolescents face significant gaps in testing and access to medication. Anurita Baines, chief of UNICEF's Global Response to HIV/AIDS, tells VOA's Carol Van Dam that while the total number of infections among girls aged 10 to 19 is down to nearly half of the 2010 total, girls were still more than twice as likely as boys or men to contract HIV last year, especially in Africa.
When we look at the numbers, we see that 75% of infections among adolescents and young women are among girls compared to boys of the same age group. They're disproportionately infected and affected for a number of reasons. All the kind of big structural reasons we talk about: gender inequality, gender-based violence, not having the ability, the power, the influence to be able to negotiate condom use, and just facing a number of inequalities that make them at disproportionate risk. But I think what I've seen in the last two decades that I've worked in the AIDS response is that the impact of AIDS has really shone a light on what gender inequality does in terms of access to healthcare, in terms of girls being more affected and infected by HIV transmission, and really making us think about what we're doing in our programming to reach them, to hear about the issues that affect them, and then being really focused in our response in terms of meeting their needs.
And in sub-Saharan Africa in particular, it appears that HIV prevalence among girls and young women is really, really high, higher than their male counterparts. Can you elaborate on that?
Correct. So for every 4 new HIV infections in sub-Saharan Africa, 3 are among adolescent girls compared to 1 among an adolescent boy or a young man. So I do want to say we've made incredible progress in the AIDS response in the last 2 decades. We're seeing really a lot of incredible achievements. I've just landed in Zimbabwe. This is a country that has reached over 90% of people living with HIV and tested them and gotten them on treatment, and are supporting them to stay on treatment, which is absolutely critical. But the decline in new infection, while it's going down, has not been fast enough. And we're seeing that decline is slower among adolescent girls and young women. And it's for the reasons that we just discussed in terms of not having access to comprehensive healthcare and sexual reproductive health. It's about not being able to negotiate condom use. It's about gender-based violence. It's about being biologically more vulnerable. And so that's really a focus for UNICEF, is to really shine a light on the disproportionate impact, and then also to support governments in terms of their programming to reach them.
Zimbabwe is doing really quite well overall, and you're there. What are they doing right that maybe other governments are not doing so well?
Very early on in the AIDS response, Zimbabwe showed very strong political leadership. They created a National AIDS Commission, speak about HIV/AIDS. There's just a lot of capacity in government. A lot of partners came together, and also mobilizing resources. You know, we do have global resources through PEPFAR as well as the Global Fund. And Zimbabwe has been really, really good and effective at showing where the gaps are in the AIDS response, identifying where people living with HIV are, identifying what they need to do in their healthcare systems and their clinics to reach them and test them, and using that data and showing what effective programs can do to get people tested and on treatment and provide care. The other thing that Zimbabwe has done really well is really showcased a lot of innovations. Now, those innovations might be, you know, fancy technologies that do testing on the spot in a clinic, but some of those innovations are also just back to basics, going door to door and seeing if anyone in the household has been sick and working with community health workers to provide the testing and the treatment and the care.
That's Anurita Baines, chief of UNICEF's Global Response to HIV/AIDS. She was speaking with my colleague, Carol Van Dam, from Victoria Falls, Zimbabwe, where she will attend the Africa AIDS Conference this week. UNICEF's report on adolescent girls and HIV was released last week ahead of World AIDS Day last Friday. As the world marks International Day of Disabled Persons today, UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres says there are nearly 1.3 billion persons with disabilities worldwide. He urges the world to work with them to design and deliver solutions based on equal rights. For more insight, VOA's Paulindiho spoke with Rachel Angibiodon, founder of Initiative for National Growth Africa and executive producer of a new documentary, Breaking Boundaries, Empowering Abilities into the Nigerian and Malawi Workforce. The documentary chronicles personal journeys and challenges of 10 individuals with disabilities in the two countries.
I'm actually not a person with disability, but I understand that disability issues are very important so that we could help support their dignity, help support their rights, and help support their well-being. And as a founder of a nonprofit organization in Nigeria known as the Special Needs Initiative for Growth, one thing that I have seen over the years is how people with disabilities have been deprived or limited or restricted from their basic rights and you know, gaining access to political, social, economic, and even cultural life. And that is one of the reasons why we are celebrating the International Day of Persons with Disabilities today. And that is one of the reasons why last year, I and my team decided to sit down and collaborate with another organization in the U.S., whereby we did a project funded by the Department of State and the Mandela Washington Fellowship to produce our first film known as Inclusion Works.
I've had the privilege of watching that film, very powerful. You talked to a lot of people across the continent. At the onset, you talked about how you are not a person with disabilities, but what got you into this? Why put a special focus on trying to highlight this major problem across the continent?
It started from when I was really young, and you know, it's really a personal story to me, but I'm happy to share this with the world because it should be able to inspire someone out there to take up an action and use this action to make a social change. For people who are non-disabled, employment is, you know, a big deal, not to talk of those who are actually disabled, who are actually labeled because of their certain physical or intellectual disability. And that's basically one of the reasons why my team and I decided to produce this film. Before the filming, one of the things we considered is, who are this potential market for employment? These are youths with disabilities. These are people who are able-bodied, or employers feel that they are able-bodied. So we're like, okay, we need to get youths with disabilities. And we looked across our other partner, Salama Africa in Malawi. So we decided to also feature persons with disabilities in the refugee camp in Malawi. And together, these voices, these protagonists, were able to share their lived experiences of the barriers to gaining access to jobs. Because whether you like it or not, we also have in the business, you know, you have a market for customers with disabilities. So if you hire people with disabilities, they can provide you more additional insight on how to help, you know, provide a larger market for customers with disabilities. So it's something that we should take seriously, So, for example, in my country, there's a legislature that says, which is called the Discrimination Against Persons with Disabilities Prohibition Act. That legislation entitles every employer of labor in Nigeria to hire at least 5% of persons with disabilities into public organizations. And the same thing goes with the Malawi government as well. But in reality, is that what it is? And that's basically why we decided to have this film, because we want to sensitize employers of labor to see reasons of hiring persons with disabilities.
That was Rakhil Ingabidion, founder of Initiative for National Growth Africa, speaking to VOA's Paul Indiho. In early November, Nigeria launched its first interconnected solar hybrid mini-grid in Nasarawa State to make electricity more reliable, renewable, and accessible. Gibson Emeka has this story from Abuja, Nigeria. Grace Ayunobi narrates.
Community health worker John Marrow says he used to rely on a flashlight when working night at the Sabongida Primary Health Center in Nigeria's Nasarawa State, but that was before a solar grid arrived in his community.
If there's any case that come in the night, we suffer it, we use this torchlight in order to treat our cases. And for labor cases, it was. We use torchlight. It's not easy.
In Sabongida, a farming community an hour from the state capital of Lafia, community leader Dauda Yakubu says the new solar power grid is making his life easier. He says there has been progress and development in welding, pumping fuel at filling stations, grinding, water purification and refrigeration. Entrepreneur Suleiman Dauda says the community is enjoying the added ease and other benefits of the solar grid. He says they didn't have light before the solar was installed. They used a generator, which was challenging. The first interconnected solar power grid was installed in collaboration with PowerGen, a renewable energy company in Africa that aims to close electricity gaps in rural areas. Omobolanle Atobatele, the head of stakeholder engagement at Husk Power Systems, says in many cases the solar companies can work with more traditional energy companies to keep the lights on.
The regulation also allows us to go into areas where the distribution companies have their franchise area, but they are presently underserving them with electricity with less than 8 hours. And so we can partner with them to provide mini grids to buffer up the supply they're presently giving, so that at least you can have minimum 20 to 23 hours.
It's a great start, but a big job lies ahead. According to the World Bank, about 45% of Nigeria's population lack access to the electricity grid. For Gibson Emeka in Abuja, Nigeria, Grace Oyenubi, VOA News.
You're listening to Africa News Tonight. I'm Yeheyes Wuhib in Washington. For more information on these and other stories from the continent, please see voaafrica.com. There you'll find all your favorite VOA radio and TV programs and a whole lot more. For world news, check out voanews.com. Israel's military today called for more evacuations in southern Gaza as it widened its offensive aimed at eliminating the territory's Hamas rulers. The health ministry in Hamas-run Gaza said the death toll in the territory since October 7th has surpassed 15,500, with more than 41,000 wounded. The ministry does not differentiate between civilian and combatant deaths, but said 70% of the dead were women and children. Israel says it targets Hamas operatives and blames civilian casualties on the militants, accusing them of operating in residential neighborhoods. The Israeli military says it has killed thousands of militants without providing evidence. Israel launched its assault on Gaza in retaliation for Hamas militants attacking Israeli communities and killing about 1,200 people. Hamas and allied fighters also took about 240 hostages back to Gaza. During a seven-day ceasefire, which ended on Friday, Hamas released 110 hostages, both Israeli citizens and foreign nationals. In return, Israel freed about 240 Palestinians from its prisons. The United States, Qatar, and Egypt say they are working on a longer truce. A member of the Guinea-Bissau's parliament says citizens are expressing frustration with President Omar Sissoko Mbalo's decision to dissolve the legislature and the government. The president's decree follows what he said was an attempted coup to overthrow his administration. Last week, the capital Bissau witnessed an exchange of gunfire between two factions of the army. Local media report soldiers from the National Guard freed an opposition minister who was detained over graft charges. For reaction to the dissolution of parliament, which opposition parties dominate, and government, VOA's Peter Kloti reached Nyang Mban. He is a student from University Hill of Bo. Mban starts by saying people do not understand why the president acted.
People, this kind of decision, they feel bad because they get it like one surprise. Because these things happen at the moments when the parliament, they continue the work as normal, everything is okay. And then the president call his members this moment. He have one meeting with them. Leaders, we hear this kind of communication of the president to dissolve the parliament. It's, that's why so the people feel they're feeling bad with this kind of decision. But is that what happened? What happened right now? No one can explain to give you some justify why the president take this kind of decision right now to put the parliament down at this moment.
You said the people are angry about the decision.
Yes, at the moment, to hear this kind of communication of the president, they feel like a surprise. They didn't expect if the president will do it today. And then it's happened. No way. If you see on the face of all of the people, on the rules, at the arm of the people, they are talking about that. You are getting this kind of feelings. They are not okay with this kind of decision of the president.
I also understand the government has also been shut down. What does it mean to the people?
Yes. At the same, the government will go down together with the parliament. That's why I saw the people scared like this.
So the people are afraid.
No, it's not too afraid because it's not too afraid. But just the people are thinking about the features. How to president are going to try and then to care about these things and then to organize the next election according to the periods. That will be possible or no. There is now the things that people are going to talk and how to do it at this moment.
That was Nyanga Mban, a student from University Hills at Bo, speaking with VOA's Peter Kloti about Guinea-Bissau's order to dissolve a parliament. Chad's opposition and civil society groups are asking France to immediately withdraw troops who arrived in Chad after the military junta in neighboring Niger told them to leave. Moki Edwin Kinzeka reports from neighboring Cameroon.
Chad opposition leader Ojai Abdelrahim Chaha says military ruler Mohamed Idriss Déby has failed to heed calls by the Central African State opposition and civil society groups to ask French troops to leave. Chaha, president of the opposition Rally for Justice and Equality, says he believes Déby wants French troops to keep Chad's military junta in power by intimidating or cracking down on civilians who are ready to protest should Déby fail to hand power to civilian rule by November 2024 as agreed. He spoke on Thursday during a news conference in the capital, N'Djamena.
Nous exigeons le démantèlement des bases militaires françaises installées au Tchad.
Chaha says opposition and civil society groups are asking Déby to make sure French troops stationed in Tchad and those who have arrived from Niger leave the Central African state no later than December 28, 2023. He says all colonial deals and newly negotiated deals between France and Chad should be cancelled and that France should stop intimidating opposition and civil society members who are fed up with France's overbearing influence in many African states. Déby, a general in Chad's army, was proclaimed head of an 18-month transitional council on April 21, 2021, to replace his late father Idriss Déby Itno, who had run Chad as a dictator for 30 years. Opposition and civil society groups said Déby cannot be trusted because he failed to hand power to a civilian government in October 2022 as agreed, and instead extended the transition period by 2 years. Déby insists he will hand power to civilian rule. The Chadian government says there have been at least 6 protests against French military presence in Chad this year. In February, there were widespread protests against French troops after civilians accused the foreign military of brutality against civilians. In early September, a French military medic opened fire and killed a Chadian soldier who reportedly attacked him with a scalpel as he received care in a military base. Anti-French protests then erupted in Faya Lajeur, a northern town, and Chad's military used live ammunition and injured several people as it struggled to disperse protesters, according to civil society groups. Kurusami Albert is an international affairs lecturer in Chad University of N'Djamena.
La présence de l'armée française dans un pays d'Afrique s'accompagne d'un certain nombre de restrictions.
Speaking to VOA via a messaging app from N'Djamena, Kurusami said civilians are unhappy because French troops restrict or arrest people who come close to their bases, an indication, he says, that the French does not want anyone to know their activities. He says even Chadian troops are restricted from going near French military bases. Kurusami says opposition and civil society groups are also angry because France claims it is working for peace, but never cares to explain the services their troops render in African states. Chad's civil society says French troops have not intervened in communal violence and armed conflicts Chad is facing. There are about 1,000 French troops in Chad. More have been coming from neighboring Niger. France has always claimed that its troops are in Africa to ensure peace and stability in friendly countries, especially where it was a former colonial power. On October 19, Colonel Pierre Goudelier, spokesperson for the French military, announced that the first convoy of French troops that left Niger by land had arrived in Chad's capital, N'Djamena. France did not disclose the final destination of their forces leaving Niger. Chad said the troops were to leave for Paris via N'Djamena International Airport, while their equipment was to transit through the Douala seaport in neighboring Cameroon. French President Emmanuel Macron had in September promised to pull all 1,500 French troops from Niger and end military cooperation with the landlocked Western African country.
That was Moki Edwin Kenzeka reporting from neighboring Cameroon. And with that, we wrap up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehia Suhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of our producer, David Van Dee, and our engineer, Al Santos, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.